The English Civil War, 1639 to 1660. The aftermath of the execution of Charles I. Well, one of the things that has always come up is who was the executioner. The identities of the executioner of Charles I and his assistant were never revealed to the public, with crude face masks and wigs hiding them at the execution, and they were probably only known to Oliver Cromwell and a few of his colleagues. The clean cut on Charles's head and the fact that the executioner held up Charles's head after the execution suggests the executioner was experienced in the use of the axe, though the fact the executioner did not call out, "Behold, the head of the traitor," could suggest that he was inexperienced in public execution of traitors, or that he simply feared identification from his voice. There was much speculation amongst the public on the identity of the executioner, with several contradictory identifications appearing in the popular press. These included Richard Brandon, William Hewlett, William Walker, Hugh Peter, George Joyce, John Big, Gregory Brandon, and even, as one French reported allegedly, Cromwell and Fairfax themselves. Though many of these proved to be unfounded rumors, the accusations, Gregory Brandon, Cromwell, and Fairfax, were entirely historical. Some may have been accurate. Colonel John Houston was given the task of finding an executioner, and he offered 40 soldiers the position of executioner or assistant in exchange for £100 and a quick promotion, though none came forward immediately. It has been suggested that one of these soldiers later accepted the job, the most probable candidate among the men being Hewlett. Shortly after execution, Hewlett received a prominent and swift promotion and was not seen to be present on the day of the king's execution. His alibi consisted of the claim he was imprisoned on the day for refusing the position, though this seems to conflict with his promotion soon after. William Hewlett was tried as executioner in October 1660 upon the Restoration and was sentenced to death for his supposed part in the execution. The sentence was soon overturned, and Hewlett was pardoned after some exculpatory evidence was presented to the judge. Overall, the most likely candidate for the execution was Richard Brandon, the common hangman at the time of Charles's execution. He would have been experienced, explaining the clean cut, and he is reported to have received £30 or at the time of the execution. He was also the executioner of other royalists before and after Charles's execution, including William Laud and Lord Capel. Despite this, Brandon denied being the executioner throughout his life, and a contemporary letter claims that he refused a parliamentary offer of £200 to perform the execution. A tract published shortly after Brandon's death, quote, "The Confession of Richard Brandon," end of quote, claims to contain a deathbed confession of Brandon to the execution of Charles, though it attracted little attention in its time and is now regarded as a forgery. Of the other candidates suggested, Peter had prominently advocated for Charles's death, but was absent on his execution, though he was reported to have kept at home through illness. Joyce was a loyal fanatic of Cromwell and had, earlier in the war, captured the king from Holdenby House. William Walker was a parliamentarian soldier who, according to local tradition, had confessed to regicide several times. Big was a clerk of the regicide Simon Mayne, and later hermit, who according to local traditions became a hermit shortly after the Restoration for fear of being tried as an executioner. General reaction. In Britain, on his execution day, the reports that Charles's last actions were fitting for his later portrayal as a martyr. As biographer Geoffrey Robertson put it, quote, "He played the martyr's part almost to perfection," end of quote. This was certainly no accident. A flurry of royalist reports overstated the horror of the crowd and the biblical innocence of Charles and his execution. Even Charles stood planning for his future martyrdom, apparently delighted that the biblical passage to be read upon the day of his execution, Matthew's account of the crucifixion. He had hinted to his cousin, the Duke of Hamilton, in 1642, quote, "Yet I cannot but tell you, I have set up my rest upon the justice of my cause, being resolved that no extremity or misfortune shall make me yield, for I will either be a glorious king or a patient martyr, and as yet, not being the first, nor at this present apprehending the other, I think it is now no unfit time to express this my resolution to you," end of quote. In the opinion of Daniel P. Klein, quote, "Charles was a defeated and humiliated king in 1649. Yet by tying his trial to Christ, the king was able to lay claim to martyrdom, connecting his defeated political cause and religious truth. End of quote. Almost immediately after Charles was executed, the supposed Meditations and Autobiography of Charles, the Icon Basilicae, began to circulate in England. The book gained massive popularity in a short time, going into 20 editions in the first month of its publication, and has been named by Philip A. Knackel the most widely read, widely discussed work of royalist propaganda to issue from the English Civil War. Of course, the book presented Charles's supposed meditations on the events of his kingship and his justifications for his past actions, widely disseminating the view of Charles as the pious martyr of the people had declared himself. It aggravated the fervor of the royalists wake of Charles's execution, and their high praise led to circulation of the book. Some sections even were put into verse and music for the uneducated and illiterate of the population. John Milton described it as the chief strength and nerves of their royalist cause. On the other side, the parliamentarians led their own propaganda war against the royalist reports. They suppressed royalist works like the Icon Basilicae and other various elegies of the deceased king by arresting and suppressing the printers of such books. Simultaneously, they worked with radical booksellers and publishers to push pro-regicide works, outprinting their opponents by 2-1 in the month of February following Charles's execution, even commissioning Milton to publish Iconoclasts as a parliamentarian rejoinder to Icon Basilicae, sharply mocking the piety of Icon Basilicae and the image-doting rabble, who latched onto its depiction of Charles attacking its royal arguments in a chapter-by-chapter fashion. Charles's prosecutor, John Cook, published a pamphlet defending the execution of Charles, giving an appeal to all rational men concerning his trial at the High Court of Justice, in which he asserted that the execution had pronounced sentence not only against one tyrant, but against tyranny itself. These publications had such an effect on the public perception that despite the regicide going against nearly every conception of social order in the period, the regicides of Charles felt safe in their position soon after. A contemporary source described Cromwell and Ireton as very cheerful and well pleased at the events of February the 24th. Now, as far as Europe is concerned, the reaction among European statesmen was almost universally negative, with the princes and rulers of Europe quick to voice their horrors at the regicide. Despite this, very little action was taken against the new English government, as foreign governments carefully avoided cutting off relations with England over their condemnations of the execution. Even the allies of the royalists in the Vatican, France, and the Netherlands avoided straining relations with the parliamentarians in England. The official statement of sympathy to Charles II from the Dutch went as far as possible to avoid calling him Your Majesty. Most European nations had their own troubles occupying their minds, such as negotiating the terms of the recently signed Peace of Westphalia, ending the Thirty Years' War, and the regicide was treated with what Richard Boney described as half-hearted irrelevance. As C.V. Wedgwood put it, the general conduct of the statesmen of Europe was to pay lip service alone to the idea of avenging the outrage of the execution, and to govern their conduct towards its perpetrators by purely practical considerations. One notable exception was Tsar Alexis, who broke off diplomatic relations with England and accepted royalist refugees in Moscow. He also banned all English merchants from his country, notably members of the Muscovy Company, and provided financial assistance to Charles II, sending his condolences to Henrietta Marie, disconsolate widow of the glorious martyr King Charles I. So that's some of the reaction that took place afterwards. Of course, the people who believed that they were safe will soon find out that that's not true, as some of them will be hunted down mercilessly. Now, the sources for this: The History of England by Thornton, Lockyer, and Smith, Cromwell, Lord Protector by Fraser, Fairfax by Wilson, Cromwell by Wedgwood, Cavaliers vs. Roundheads, English Civil War, 1642-1649, English Civil War 1642-1651 by Gaunt, and the English Civil War Atlas and Concise History of the Wars of the Three Kingdoms 1639-51 by Lipscomb. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you.